Happy Sunday and happy Q2. We made it through Q1 and now it's April. It's Q2. Yay. Summer is almost here, you guys. And I just want to take a quick moment to say thank you for listening. We have over 20,000 downloads and nearly 1,500 people consistently listen to the show each week. So thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Before we start this week's show, a couple of things I need your help with. First, don't keep all this good info to yourself. I need you to help other listeners find the show. So please subscribe, rate, and write a review. That is the most important. Write a review of the podcast. This helps other listeners find the show. Second, I want to make sure that you get all the freebies that I have planned for you in Q2. So head on over to TrillMBA.com and sign up to gain access to tools, tips, and tricks that will help you get your best possible career outcome. Now, in this week's episode, there is a discount code. So if you're applying for grad school or undergrad in the fall, you definitely want to take advantage of the info in this episode and listen to the end. And there is an awesome discount code to get you additional help on your application journey. Now, let's start the show. Welcome to the Trill MBA Show. I'm your host, Felicia Ann Rose Anuha, aka the trillest MBA you will ever know. And I'm here to help you survive and thrive in corporate America by giving you the truth and being as real as only I can be. Our goal at the Trill MBA Show is to make sure that we are delivering content that provides the tangible and tactical information you need to get the best out of your career. This includes highlighting resources that you may not know about. My guest today is on a mission to help you navigate the admissions process of getting into elite schools. Co-founder and CEO of Admit Advantage, a company that assists prospective students in maximizing their admissions opportunity, Kofi Concom understands firsthand the challenges and advantages of gaining admission into some of the world's most renowned institutions of learning. Kofi is a Harvard graduate twice over, holding a Bachelor's of Arts degree in biology and a Master's of Education degree from the Harvard School of Education. Kofi also earned an MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, where he was a Joseph Wharton Fellow. And these are only Kofi's academic credentials. Today, Kofi shares the story of his journey, why he is passionate about helping prospective students navigate an increasingly complex and competitive admissions process, why he is launching a new company, AdmitMe, which is currently in beta and free for users. Kofi, thank you so much for coming on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I really appreciate it. Anytime I get an intro like that, it makes me anxious because I can't live up to it, but I'll try. I'll do my best.
Boo, you already got the degrees. They can't take away the degrees.
That's true. I got the debt too. I have the debt too.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Amen to student loans. And may somehow the hackers do good in the world and hack Sallie Mae, the Department of Ed.
Yeah. Shout out to Sallie Mae and Fannie.
Oh God. Just if you're gonna hack something, hack away our student loans. Like, do that. You know? That's what we need in the world.
Right.
But now, Kofi, before we get started, I have to ask you, because you have all these pedigree degrees and you're very polished, but this is the Trill MBA Show. So you have to promise to keep it 100% real. And this is a safe space for code switching out of your corporate self. So can you do that?
I can do that. I pledge to do that.
Okay.
I'm an entrepreneur. I actually don't really have a corporate side so much anymore. That's why I don't work in the world. But yes, I'll keep it super 100.
Awesome. I always have to ask that of my super duper Ivy League guest because, you know, you've been trained by the best.
Right.
So your resume is amazing. And that was just in your 20s, your academic achievements. So, but first, let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about how did you even get to Harvard? Like, what was your childhood like? Like, you must have been one of these special kids that had, like, your parents must have had the hookup, right? Because it's Harvard and you're Black. And so you must have got some kind of special treatment.
Not really. I mean, it's funny you say that, obviously, in light of kind of the scandal that's happening in college admissions. But, you know, my parents are from Ghana. I'm a first-generation American. My dad is pretty strict. My mother's pretty laid back. They're interesting couple, except when it comes to school. They definitely had a perspective of, you know, we're going to do our jobs and your job is school. So don't get fired and do well. And they just set very high standards for all their kids. I'm one of four, you know, I think between us, my three sisters, and I think we counted, we have like 13 degrees or something. It's something like that. So I'm just, you know, I'm one member of the team, but, you know, I grew up in upstate New York. My dad worked at GE for about 13 years. I was born in Canada. My mom and my dad met in college. My mom was my dad's math tutoree or student, which is a little scary, a little freaky, but they're celebrating 50 years of being married. So I guess it worked out.
It was meant to
but
be.
I grew up there. Yeah, 50 years. So, but I grew up in upstate New York and I moved to Cleveland. My dad took a job at NASA. And I basically went to a public school, pretty good public school, but a public school nonetheless. I think I was the first person to go to Harvard in about a decade, if not more. You know, I was a very good student. I mean, I was kind of one of those well-rounded students. So in a lot of AP and honors classes, I was co-captain of the soccer team. I was treasurer of National Honor Society. I'm trying to remember so long ago. You know, I ran track. I was basically the slowest Black kid in track. So I was always running the second or third heat, which is pretty embarrassing, actually. And I was pretty much going to go to Ohio State. I mean, I had a full ride. I was in the top five in a class of about 200 people. But I was, you know, I had good SAT scores. But I was going to go to, like, Michigan, Ohio State. About 80% of my high school went to college in Ohio, Michigan, or Pennsylvania. And I was going to be like all the others. And then it really took a student, a Black woman actually from Harvard, was a junior at the time. She came to my high school. We were not on Harvard's recruiting list. She went to a elite private school in Cleveland. But she said, look, there are good students at all these high schools. I'm going to go recruit from some of these high schools. So she came with a bunch of folders, came to my high school and basically said, okay, I want to talk to the top 10% of people in, you know, the junior and senior classes. And I went, I was trying to get out of class. So I went and I, at the time, wasn't really thinking about this seriously. I just felt like, well, I'm going to go. We'll see what she's talking about. I pretty much said, I'm going to get a full ride to Ohio State. I'm not even sure why I'm going. But then I met her and I was like, oh, she's interesting. She's pretty. I'm going to try to holler at her when I get to campus. And of course I didn't because she barely talked to me. But the main point is she sort of knocked down every reason I had for not applying, right? I'm not going to be comfortable. They're not people like me there. It's going to be too expensive. It's too far, et cetera. And she really inspired me and motivated me to apply. And actually, ironically, she just got appointed the superintendent of the Cleveland Public Schools. So I just shot her a text last week. But that was kind of my motivation to apply. So this is someone that looks like me. This is someone who's really encouraging me. I did not get a lot of encouragement from a few key teachers in my high school who told me, you know, you're wasting your time. Why even go there? You're not going to get in. Literally to my face. Even people that I had gotten A's from. I won't say it's every teacher, but there were two or three teachers that were very clear that they didn't believe in my pursuit of that kind of degree. So it was interesting.
Just for shits and giggles, Were these teachers Black?
No, they weren't. They were not Black. I mean, there were, I don't think there were any Black teachers in my high school. So they weren't. One was a humanities teacher. Again, I did really well in her class. And I'm not even sure how she found, I think I may have asked her for a recommendation. And she told me I wasn't going to get it. So I pretty much said, okay, maybe I shouldn't ask you for a recommendation. I didn't really feel like she was on my side. But it was definitely interesting. I think, you know, the school, you know, like I said, most people in my high school did not go to those kinds of colleges. And unfortunately, a lot of the Black students definitely didn't go. There weren't, you know, the school was kind of, I won't say it was two schools, but you had sort of the general classes and you had sort of AP and honors, and the AP and honors were much less diverse than, you know, than basically the regular classes. And I was pretty much the only Black person in the AP and honors pretty much throughout my whole 4 years of high school there.
Yeah, I definitely can resonate with that. I think that's something that we all go through, but I think it's so sad. And even Michelle Obama talked about this in her book, Becoming, to,
right,
you know, have teachers that tell you you're not going to get in, or you're not, like for Michelle, it was like, you're not Princeton material. And it's like,
right,
but what school did you go to? Like,
right,
who are you to shit on a child's dream? But I commend you for not internalizing that, for, you know, having the belief in yourself to say, hey, I can do this. Where do you think that came from?
Well, look, I did internalize it some. I mean, I did have to work it through. And I think it's important to say that, you know, that we're not super people, right? So, I mean, I did take it to heart. You know, like I said, this woman definitely encouraged me. I stayed in touch with her. Part of it was my friends in my high school, a lot of my Black friends, like, look, we think you can do this. Like, it wasn't kind of like, you know, you're the one that's going to make it out. It wasn't like that dramatic movie script, but they definitely, there was a bit of, hey, look, we think you can do it. You've always been kind of the nerd. If you can't do it, who's going to do it? And I appreciated that. I also think it was looking at my parents who, you know, came to America with nothing and then became successful professionals, and thinking about sort of the literal and emotional distance, especially coming in sort of the 50s and 60s, what they had to deal with, threats of physical violence, dealing with coming to an unknown continent when there was no internet, you know, and they only had a couple channels in Ghana, seeing them sort of cross that distance and really overcome some pretty serious odds really made me feel like this was not something I couldn't beat. And, you know, I was kind of made for that, you know, but I had to, you know, once sort of the disappointment and shock and concern turned to anger, I then had to channel that. But I just sort of, you know, get my sea legs and kind of pick myself up and try to make it happen.
Oh, I'm very glad you did, because, you know, there's somebody out there who is facing the same or similar challenge today. Because slavery, this is still happening.
Right.
And so I hope that they get to hear your voice and hear that somebody said you wouldn't make it at Harvard or couldn't make it into Harvard. And now you have 2 degrees from Harvard. So what made you decide to get 2 degrees from Harvard? Were you trying to prove a point?
No, I was trying to go more in debt, I guess. No. So I did a lot of student teaching when I was on campus. I'm in a service-oriented fraternity, which is actually important. It's Alpha Phi Alpha. It's important to know that that's a historically Black fraternity. I never thought I'd find it at a school like Harvard. But as it turns out, you know, we had been there since 1915. So I did a lot of student teaching. That was very important to me. You know, we were on campus. The way Harvard's set up, you know, you've got Harvard and MIT, which are about maybe 2 miles apart. And you've got Black and brown kids cutting through campus to go from one part of Cambridge to another without ever thinking of setting foot on campus as students, right? And sometimes they weren't made to feel welcome by obviously a lot of the college students who hadn't necessarily interacted with, you know, local Black and brown kids, maybe didn't have all the opportunities a lot of my classmates did. And so my fraternity wanted to do something about it, my chapter specifically. So I did a lot of student teaching with local kids on weekends. And I basically realized that this was a bit of my passion. I was also having a lot more fun in college as a junior and senior than I probably did as a freshman and sophomore. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to run it back and do a 1-year grad degree. I got a little bit of money. And I also, at the time, I had a girlfriend who was younger than me. So I thought this is a great way for us to like hang out a little bit more. So all those factors kind of came together. It seemed like it would be a good idea just to spend one more year. I mean, I'd spent 4 years there. I figured to get one degree, if I can spend one more year there and get another degree in something I love. And although I really wasn't sure I was going to use it, I thought, why not do it?
Why not just stay at Harvard another year and get a graduate degree from Harvard? Why not? Love it.
I know. I sound like a jerk saying that, but
no. That was no. No, I'm.
I'm joking.
No, yeah. It's just I think people think that they have to be special. You know, like particularly special, but you come across to me as very relatable, very down to earth. And just, I mean, you're an alpha. I have friends who are alphas. I am a zeta. You know, the Divine Nine is amazing. And so it's like you're just like the rest of us. And I want people to understand that. Like, you're not some magical unicorn out there. You are a human being with abilities that you used and you worked to get to where you are.
Yeah, I did. And I think it's really important to know that, you know, when I set foot on campus, I definitely was a bit intimidated. I'm not going to lie. But then I started realizing, you know, there are people here who are geniuses, but there are a lot of people here who are just really hard workers, people that know how to play the game. And there's an element of people feeling they deserve to be there. They have siblings that went there. Their school sent many people there. There were definitely people that were way smarter than me, but I also felt like, hey, I belong here. While people might be smarter than me, I was pretty resolved that no one was going to ever outwork me. And so it's funny, like when I think about sort of your question, I think about how unsure I was about even applying to Harvard 4 years earlier. And then when I'm a senior there, I'm like, oh, I'll just stay and do another year. Like, it kind of became a place where I was that comfortable, where I felt like I earned the right to be there, that you're, to a certain extent, you're right. Going to grad school, I just kind of made a decision, I'm going to go to grad school here and kind of figure out how to do it. And that was like a really big transition for me from 4 years earlier as this kid, you know, first generation American, you know, in Ohio, looking to go to school in the Midwest, to now being on Harvard's campus and feeling like I'm so comfortable here. I've got friends and family here. I'm part of a vibrant Black community, and I'm just going to spend another year here. So it was a big transition, but I had to go there and kind of demystify the place. I mean, obviously we all love to a certain extent the fact that there are benefits conferred with going there, but I do think it's a little bit overblown. I do think people have a real strong misconception about what it is to be there and how special you are. You have to be there. You don't have to be that special. You have to take advantage of opportunities. You have to have opportunities in the first place and probably get some kind of motivation and encouragement to try to pursue it and feel like you're worthy of being there. And I was very lucky to get that from my family and friends, as well as this woman that came to visit my high school.
If you didn't hear that, rewind that, listen to that again.
Run it back.
So now you have 2 degrees from Harvard. What do you go do after the second degree? Do you start teaching? Like, what? Tell us about your career journey. And I can definitely see passion for education leading you to Admit Advantage. But there were some years in between there that you did some other things.
My mother calls those the lost years. She's getting over it, though, now, I think. You know, so I was in the ed school, and I came out, and so when I went to ed school, I thought, okay, I might do an MD, MBA. I majored in neurobiology in college. I thought maybe, so I worked in Ghana between the summer of when I graduated my first year going to ed school, and I worked in a hospital, Military Hospital 37 in Ghana. Shout out to Military Hospital 37, if you're listening. But you know, when I worked there, I worked with a neurosurgeon. He was telling me, look, a lot of the issues we have are not necessarily with medical care. The doctors here are trained well. It's the fact that we don't have the right equipment. We don't have CAT scans. We don't have MRI machines. We don't have the infrastructure. So this is much more of a operational business issue than it is a medical issue in terms of people dying from random things you'd never expect them to die from, you know, flu. You know, I remember working there, and if you were going to get surgery, you had, and you needed like materials, you had to actually go buy the materials yourself and at the time and bring them to the hospital for the doctor to use them. If you didn't have the materials, you know, if you didn't have those materials, then you have to wait till you could afford to get those materials to bring them there. So he said, like, this is a money issue. And so at that time I said, okay, I'm going to go back to the States. I'm going to do my MED, master's in education. I'm going to do an MBA and an MED and a medical degree, an MD degree. And eventually I sort of said, you know what? I don't think I really love the sight of blood. I don't think I want to be in school forever. There were a lot more things that were interesting to me beyond medicine. And my mom's a kidney specialist, I should say. So I kind of saw her lifestyle. And I said, okay, I think I want to get the MBA. And so I'm a huge soccer fan. My son is named after Michael Essien. His name's Essien. So just to show you how much I love soccer. And I ended up being involved with a startup, I should say. It was like two people at the time. It was an internet soccer software company. And so I went to Accenture because I thought, okay, if I'm going to get an MBA, I need to work for a reputable company that'll sort of feed me into a good MBA program. So that was my Accenture stint, and that was in technology. But, you know, I just hated that job. I really thought it was just too big a company. I felt like a cog in the wheel. I felt like the stuff I was doing wasn't impactful. No one really cared about it. Even the clients often didn't care. They just would shelve the recommendations and shelve our decks and so forth. So I ended up leaving to join this internet soccer software company, selling news and stats to ESPN and CNNSI, et cetera. We grew the company from about, I think there were three, four people when I sort of joined, to about close to 30. And of course, you know, we raised some money. We had an opportunity to be sold, and we did not take that opportunity because we felt like we were being lowballed. So here I am, you know, I'm 25. I'm about to probably be sitting on $3 to $4 million, which I thought, you know, was not, I won't say I didn't think it was enough, but I felt like ESPN had just bought one of our competitors, SoccerNet, for about $69-70 million. So we were being offered in the mid-20s. I thought, this is crazy. That's too little. The market tanked. We ended up going from like close to 30 people and sort of going down to like 7. So like we had all these cuts, and here I am, and I'm 25, 26, and I think I'm smart, I'm analytical, but I've got no business training, and I've got employees reporting to me, some of whom were in their 60s, and I just felt like I was flying by the seat of my pants. I felt like I was really woefully underprepared. I wasn't able to speak the language of business, but I kind of knew some of the concepts from living it, and that was when I made the decision, I'm going to go back and get an MBA. And, you know, I solidified that. And so I ended up applying to Wharton. My sister was at Penn. My younger sister was at Penn at the time. You know, I wanted to sort of be in the New York type area. Philly to New York is not that far. I had a girlfriend at the time that ended up promoting me and to her husband. So I'm married to her now, 2 kids. And so she was in New York with me. And so I thought, let me stay someplace, you know, reasonably close. And so I ended up going to Penn for business school. And then, you know, from there, do you want me to keep going or do you want me to stop?
No, keep going. Okay. I'm fascinated. So you went to Penn.
Okay. I went to Penn. So, you know, I'm down there. My sister's there. I had this thing, this nagging feeling like, you know what? I want to do something in education. I want to do well and do good. I guess I was still the neurobiology, you know, person. I felt like I had so many opportunities. I'd lucked into things. And it wasn't enough for me just to make a lot of money. I just did not think that would resonate enough for me. It just didn't feel impactful enough. And so I ended up saying, okay, I'm going to start something in education. I had a different company with another Black classmate we started called Jobs in Sight, where we kind of helped universities manage their alumni once they came back looking for new jobs, right? Because a lot of alums graduate, and then within like 3 to 5 years, it's like some astounding number of, I think it's like 60% of people are already looking for the next opportunity or have started the next opportunity. So we were helping universities manage those people. Some really simple you know, software, and we ended up selling that company while I was getting that company going, you know, in order to keep my girlfriend with me at the time and try to save for a ring. I ended up doing some admissions coaching support for another company, and I realized, like, you know, I've got strong ideas on how to do this better. I think the training can be better. I want to do this on my own with another friend. So when I sold the first company, I linked up with Eric, whose wife was a guidance counselor in the Philadelphia area. And so they had a concept of starting something like this. And so it was just serendipity. It was God speaking that brought us together. We were friends in school, and we said, let's start this company. That was sort of the beginning of Admit Advantage.
Wow. And that was over 10 years ago.
That was over 10 years ago. Yeah. And we ran it. Look, we got in the business. We thought, okay, you know, we're Black. It's going to be hard for us probably to raise money. So we thought, let's start a company where we don't need a lot of invested capital. We've got background education to do it. Eric went to Brown, was a mechanical engineering major, was on a full ride to Wharton, super smart. So they say, you know, always work with someone that's smarter. So I chose to do that. Eric did not follow that advice. But, you know, not everyone can win in a relationship. So we started the company, you know, we did a lot of the admissions coaching on our own initially, and then we realized we kind of refining our process, we got a bunch of referrals, and we started hiring people. We, you know, our model was, let's hire people that are, went to really good schools, but kind of can use extra money, and or doing things that are different. So we had entrepreneurs, we had a speechwriter for Joe Biden who worked with us, we had a bunch of stay-at-home moms, we had people working at startups, people that could sort of leverage, people that could had extra time and could sort of move their schedules around a little bit to work with our client base. So we ended up, you know, building that company. You know, we have at this point close to 40 people that work with us. We work with candidates all over the world, typically in about 15 to 18 countries around the world, with a bunch of test prep organizations, et cetera. So we have this thriving company, Admit Advantage. And then, you know, at a certain point, literally, we were having lunch. I remember we were having like Chinese lunch down in Silver Spring, our office. And I looked at Eric and said, what are we like? We're not helping any of the people that we thought we would really be focused on helping. And we're kind of, we have some pro bono work, but a lot of the kids that we work with are basically, you know, well to do or super wealthy. They're all nationalities, but a lot of like well to do kids. And I just felt like we're making good money. We've got a good company, but it doesn't have that kind of mission that's really important to us when we started the company. And so we kind of, you know, put that in the back of our minds and kind of kept working through the season. And then we go to these events and these like college and career tours, and we see all these schools spending tons of money, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 a city to be there. And that doesn't include airfare, per diems, hotels, et cetera. Some schools started reaching out to us and saying, hey, look, if you have good people, we'd love to like meet them. We got flown out by, to Hyderabad, India, by the Indian School of Business. And we realized, you know, we could have a platform where we give a lot of the feedback, because we do these free consultations that take a huge amount of time. I'm like, what if people just created profiles? We gave feedback to people in like 5 to 7 minutes, like annotated digital feedback, like a sticky note type feedback on a profile, like a LinkedIn type profile, with like target schools, what they want to major in, grades, activities, hobbies, cities that interest them, et cetera. They get feedback on that. And then we basically let schools begin to recruit those candidates. And that was kind of where the idea for NIMI came in, because we realized, you know what? If we do that, people don't have to pay. Every candidate will have value because schools will want them. So we don't have to worry about selling people into, you know, consulting when they may not want it. I mean, obviously you can't get, you're going to get more help with consulting than you will with the platform, but it seemed like a really good idea. And that's where the idea for Admit Me was born.
That is awesome, because from this scandal that broke, especially like, I know UNC is like one of the schools that's definitely been highlighted. I know there's a bunch of schools.
Yeah, USC. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, USC. Yep. I know even the University of Texas at Austin also is involved in some ways. With Admit Me, it's in beta now, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So right now you can go to admit.me, and you, if you're a student, you can go there, you can fill out your profile, and then what happens?
So you can fill out your profile and get free feedback on your candidacy. What are good schools for you? What are some strengths you really need to kind of polish up more so that they can be more helpful for you? What are some weaknesses and ways that you can sort of address those weaknesses? You will get that feedback from alumni and former admissions officers, as well as current students who are at some of these schools. That's totally free. Okay. From there, you can do a bunch of things. You can search for and find other applicants who are applying to similar schools like you, or who might be a little bit ahead of you, maybe a year ahead. You can compare notes. So you can say, look, you know, I'm in California. I want to study math. I'm thinking of applying to UCLA. You might be able to link up with someone who's in Michigan who's thinking about studying math at Michigan. So you guys are not really competing because you're not applying to the same schools. And you can see what schools are applying to, obviously. And you can sort of talk about the programs, talk about how you're sort of representing your interests, talk about some, you know, just compare notes on kind of how you're tackling and approaching your application process. So you can, like, get that feedback, find other students. You can go to events that schools are having on the platform. So we're heavily focused in grad right now, but we have 8 schools, including Duke. Felicia will be glad to know, including Duke on there. You went to Duke, right?
No, I went to Indiana University, Indiana School of Business. So, but I have friends that went to Duke, so I'm not opposed to all right. Duke.
So we have, you know, a bunch of schools on there that are having events that are basically trying to find students like you, right? Students that are applying. So you can interact with those schools, and you can also use tools like a calendar to help manage your process. So we have an admissions calendar where you enter your target schools and the date your applications are due, and it'll back end and give you all the things you need to do between now, let's say, you know, April 2nd, April 3rd, I should say, through basically, you know, December 31st when apps are due. So you can do all that kind of stuff, and we're soon to add some curriculum. We're actually building it now where beyond sort of getting sort of that feedback and using tools, we're actually building like a TurboTax, a do-it-yourself application curriculum. So a lot of the stuff we do with our coaching, we're giving you like the tools and templates you can drive your way through the process yourself. Most of that will be free. We're going to have a component where we're not going to charge more than like 30, 40 bucks a month to get some of the high-end content. And like we're trying to sort of really, it's important to level the playing field. I think if you're an entrepreneur, it sounds corny, but most entrepreneurs are very idealistic and they do have like missions, and that is our mission. Our mission is we think we can build a company that does very well, but also does good. And we really want to demystify that application process and give candidates the tools they need to get in and, you know, kind of disrupt our consulting business. You know, I'd love to sort of shut that down over time, right? You don't have to pay, you know, hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars. You can kind of do it all on AdmitMe. Right now, we're keeping that going partially because, you know, we'd have to raise more funding and we kind of need to get going. We're in a beta, but it is deliberately disruptive towards the consulting industry. I figured if someone's going to eat our lunch, it might as well be us.
Amen. But what I love about this is that it's affordable. So yeah. If you have somebody like me, I grew up in a single parent household where it was me, my mom, and my grandma in one bathroom. And my mom made no more than $14,000 a year as I was growing up. That's how much she was making before she retired as a teacher's assistant from the school district. You know, I just think about how a platform like this would have really helped me and maybe expanded my horizons around my opportunities. But I think I really was a victim of undermatching, even though I still went to a great school. Like I went to the University of Texas at Austin. It's the best school in the whole state. And if you're from Texas, your brain has been conditioned to say it's the best school in the whole world, whether you know
it is a great school,
the truth or not. It is a great school. But I definitely had the goods to go to an Ivy League, but I wasn't encouraged to go. And I don't think people understand about undermatching. So undermatching is when you have students who are usually from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and they're really bright students, but you know, they don't go to the best public schools. And so a lot of times they end up at a community college, or they don't even go to college because nobody around them goes to college. What I love about today is that even the poorest kids have some access to the internet. And so how do you plan on building awareness about AdmitMe for these kids so they can see on this platform that they have an opportunity to go to a school that they probably never even thought of?
Right. Good question. That's a question our investors ask. It's a question we think about a lot. Well, I will tell you that obviously being here is part of it, right? So doing more interviews, talking about it. I mean, I want to talk to people that really care about this, and the people that really care about it are often people that look like us, right? And that have lived it. I mean, most of my Black friends that have gone to the Texas of the world, the Harvards, et cetera, have had moments of being discouraged, have had moments where people have actively discouraged them and have had self-doubts, and sometimes haven't just had the visibility to the fact that it's possible. So, you know, we're trying to tell our own story doing, you know, doing interviews like this. We are working on getting a post writing for like the USA Today. We're also trying to do something in Black Enterprise Magazine where, you know, been listed as a Black BE Modern Man. So we're, you know, it looks like we have the opportunity to do that. We're also reaching out to the Divine Nine. You mentioned, you know, this, those are the historically Black fraternities and sororities where most of them have some kind of program where they've got some sort of college outreach or motivation for like young kids to go to college. So for Alphas, it's go to high school, go to college. So we're supporting where chapter by chapter, college brothers are charged with going out in the local community and inspiring and like helping local kids apply to school. And so we're basically trying to piggyback on that and be a tool. It's a free tool, right? So we're trying to be a tool that can be used to kind of to do that. So those are kinds of some of the efforts we're doing. We're doing some stuff online in marketing, advertising, but those are the things. We're collecting enough information online where we're also trying to, you know, using like Facebook and Google, you can target your ads and have like, you know, ads where people look like the people you're marketing to. You can do that. And so we're pretty deliberate about making sure that people see this is a minority-run company. We want all kids, but I think there's a particular interest in like Black and brown kids who aren't getting these kinds of opportunities. And we're trying to be visible to them and let them know it's possible. And that we're invested in them. That was the biggest thing is for a lot of kids. Liz coming back to my college, I was the woman coming back to my high school as a woman from Harvard came to visit. I applied because she was invested in me, right? Like she cared. She was spending time. And I knew that. I didn't have the language to say she's invested in me, but I knew that she was spending time because I knew that she cared. And that's, it's hard to do that as a company. You know, but we're trying to do that and let all of our potential users know we do care. This is why we built it. You know, it's a company, but like we're not doing things just to make money. That's not fulfilling. We kind of did that already.
Well, I love what you are doing with AdmitMe. We need it. I know you're starting with graduate school. And so for those people who are interested in going to get their graduate education. And for me specifically, I have a lot of, you know, potential MBAs listening in my audience. Let's talk about that cycle, because right now is the time where you should be getting really serious about if you're going to go. You should be in the midst of studying for the GMAT and taking the GMAT right now, because it's beginning of April. And then you should be looking at working on your applications as soon as you finish the GMAT and get the score that you want. But that should be by like June, early July, so that you'll have July, August, September, and October to really focus on connections, writing your essays, getting your letters of recommendation, and really focus on building your network now. And so something I love about what you said a function of AdmitMe has has is this opportunity to network with students who are in your same boat.
Right. That's right. It's really important. And it's fun also, right? I mean, yeah. That's what people want. There are obviously some things that you feel like you can ask students, you can't ask admissions officers. And it's a way of sort of, it's kind of like, I can't remember those doctors. There were like four black men that grew up in New Jersey, and they made a pledge to each other, all going to basically help each other get to medical school. And they ended up doing it. Maybe it's called The Pledge or something like that. I think they're going to do a movie on those guys. They wrote a book on them, but that's part of it. You know, like having people that can, you know, in the same boat that can motivate you, that you can sort of train with, and you can push each other and support each other during these times, because it's pretty difficult to apply to school and be working or still be in school and be in a world where not other people are applying. And some people are saying, why are you doing that? Sometimes because they don't understand, sometimes because they're just haters. So it's important to have that kind of that community. And we know that we've been in, you know, in that world too, as applicants. And so we want to replicate that online.
Well, Kobe, I have two more questions for you before we wrap up. The first question I have is, you know, from your perspective and all these years of working in this industry and working with so many people and helping so many people get into their dream schools, what is the number one piece of advice you would give somebody as they're starting out this journey to get into graduate school?
That's a good question. The number one piece of advice would be think and plan before you write, right? And understand what I mean by that is so many candidates just start and look at the essays and just start writing, and they don't have a plan for what they want to express. So, for example, checking out like MBA, or actually all these schools, you know, you should have an idea of, okay, what are the stories, experiences, and accomplishments that I really want expressed in my application. It's probably going to be a mix of personal, professional, academic items. And then what are basically, you know, if I interviewed your best friend or, you know, a sibling or a parent, I said, okay, tell me like, you know, the leadership, tell me the characteristics that you think describe Felicia or Kofi. It'd be a mix of things like innovative, entrepreneurial, a great communicator, you know, civically or community minded, initiative taking, adaptive, etc. So before you start, you want to have like a set of things, like a narrative that you're trying to build. A lot of candidates just start writing. They don't have that narrative. And so you want to have that narrative. It's probably going to be, you know, 4 to 7 stories and probably 3 to 5 leadership characteristics. And those are going to be the things that you allocate across the different pillars of your application, which are basically, you know, the essays, the letters of recommendation, the resume, you know, the non-essay sort of data portion, the portion you fill out online, and obviously the interview. And you want to make sure those 5 pillars are somewhat redundant, but not exactly. So you almost want them working like fingers on a hand, where they complement each other and there's some overlap, but not fully. And so the candidates that often get into these schools are candidates that either know that explicitly, or they just have an instinct that they need to sit back and sort of get their ducks in a row, figure out kind of what they want to say, and also be comfortable with the fact that they're not going to be able to include everything. It's almost like a good movie. You know, a good movie might be 1 hour and 40 minutes, but there might be like 15 hours of footage shot. And so a good movie maker knows, okay, and is comfortable with the fact that he's going to leave or she's going to leave 80-90% of the stuff they're going to leave on the cutting room floor, so to speak, and like they're only going to include the best 1 hour 40. That requires planning. They don't just go and shoot the first 1 hour 40 and say, this is a movie. They think about what they want. You know, they try different things. They've got the universe of stuff, and they cut out what they don't need, and they are comfortable sort of, they understand or are comfortable with the fact that they're not going to have everything they want or everything, every bit of like their narrative and their story in the application itself.
That is, oh my God. I wish somebody had told me that when I was applying to school.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Thank you for sharing that with my listeners.
Of course.
That was nuggets. So my last question to you is a little bit controversial, but being that you are an expert in this space, I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Don't send me to jail. Don't make me say something that's going to get me locked up.
No. So I don't know if you've paid attention out here in the zeitgeist, but there are a number of white male entrepreneurs who have different platforms that are encouraging this next generation not to go to college.
Yes.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, what I think is interesting, and I know you're talking about like Peter Thiel and other people like that, is a lot of the people saying don't go to school are people that have like super, you know, have super degrees. So I think like Peter Thiel is a, he's a founder of PayPal. I mean, I think he's a Stanford undergraduate, Stanford Law School alum. So it's interesting. Look, I think a couple of things about this. The truth of what they're saying is that a lot of universities, not the Indianas, not the Harvards, not the Texas, et cetera, there are 5,000 universities in the States and about another 5,000 globally. A lot of universities are not doing a great job helping their students get employment or access to next opportunities. Now, you may say the top 200 are doing a great job of that. I probably would say even the top 500. That still leaves another 4,500, which are not doing a great job of that. And so there is this angst where people are applying to school. People are going to college. They think they're scratched, you know, they think they're checking off all the boxes. They've got good GPAs. And they feel like they were promised a bill of goods because they can't find that job opportunity they always wanted. And meanwhile, they're sitting on, you know, $20,000 to $40,000 of college debt. So that is a truth which most experts aren't basically denying. I think that it's disingenuous, though, to sort of say college doesn't make sense. College isn't right. But I think people have to be careful about the colleges they choose. I think they need to think about, you know, if there's some random small school that's charging you $40,000 to go to school there that doesn't have great placement but is like beautiful, it's in the woods, et cetera, versus a local school which is like 80% less but which has better placement. You got to be pretty careful. You have to be thoughtful about, does it even make sense to apply to some of these schools? I mean, I think some of these colleges have not met their mission of preparing graduates to do well professionally. I don't think the answer is a blanket, don't go to college. I also don't think, you know, let's keep it 100% real, as I promised I would. That doesn't work for people of color, okay? Like, we have to be educated. I've been out and seen white males without, you know, who are college dropouts get funding. I don't know many people of color, male, female. I don't know many women. I don't know anybody who's not a white male who basically is dropped out and has gotten funding, right? That doesn't really work for us. You know, we still are, I mean, there's still this adage, you have to be twice as good. And part of that is the signaling of being well-educated. You know, that is still a currency that people look to say, okay, you're smart, you're capable, you're socialized, I can do business with you, I can work with you, et cetera. We're not at a place now in America where that's possible. We're just not. Look at the presidency, Barack Obama, Columbia, Harvard Law School. You look at Trump went to Penn/Wharton, didn't even do well, but he was asking Obama to report his grades. Meanwhile, it's pretty well known that Trump was like a C student, you know, at Fordham, and he kind of got a favor called in to go to Penn, did not really do well at Wharton, but no one has ever challenged him in his grades, right?
Right.
That's just the reality, I mean, of how we're living. So I don't think it works for people of color. And I still think for most people, a college education is one of the greatest catapults in a, like, a better life that you could ever have. And the reality is in America, you can go to college. There's so many different options that you don't have in a lot of other countries in the world. If you want to go to college, you're a working adult, you can find a school. You have to be thoughtful. You have to be careful. You can take classes and kind of propel yourself into the next level of earnings and just a better lifestyle generally.
Amen. Thank you for that word. Kofi, I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing your story and sharing, you know, how you got to this mission that started with Admin Advantage, which Admin Advantage still exists for today. We want to make sure we
still exist. We're still helping people right now. And I have a nugget for it. I have a gift for you guys.
Ooh.
But wait, we are offering a 15% discount. It's Trill MBA 15. So 15% discount for any of your listeners that want help. And you can also pay over time. Like, we will figure out how to make it work. with your candidates. It's kind of why we started the company. It's still our company, so we kind of do what we want, but we do have that discount for you guys. So
that is amazing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So of course.
You guys, Trill MBA 15, if you go to admitadvantage.com, is that correct?
Yes, and it's 1515.
Trill MBA 15 for 15% off at admitadvantage.com. Now, Kovi, before I let you go, please let us know how we can connect with you.
So you can connect with me by just shooting me an email. So I'm pretty accessible. It's Kofi, K-O-F-I, K as in kangaroo, O as in orange, F as in Frank, I as in India, at admit.me, admit.me. You just shoot me a note, and we'll, everyone that wants to will get a free consultation. So, you know, I want to talk to this audience. Like, I want to make sure, I mean, I kind of care if you work with us, but I really don't care that much. I feel like things work out. I want to make sure that people feel motivated, they feel driven, they feel supported. Like, I think it'll all come back to us, but give me a call if you're thinking about school, you have, like, barriers, there are issues, reach out to me, we'll set up a time to talk, and we'll help, you know, figure out those challenges together.
This so warms my heart. I'm trying not to cry, because everybody, they're skin folk and kin folk, but Kofi, you are so kin folk. I appreciate you so much. My audience appreciates you so much. So you guys, use Kofi, Admit Advantage. Admit Me is in beta. So you can go to admit.me right now and fill out your profile and get information you need to understand what schools would be a great fit for you. And it's probably schools that you probably think you can't even get into. So really, you guys, use these resources. That's why we are here. This is why I do this show. And as always, if you need some help or advice about specific situations, you can go to trillmba.com/coaching to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with me to strategize and walk you through your specific work situation. In addition, you can always email me at ask@trillmba.com. I'm happy to either answer your question or I can connect you to the right person like Kofi if I don't have the answer. So again, that's trillmba.com/coaching to schedule a free 30-minute consult and ask@trillmba.com to submit your question or concern. So Kofi, thank you so much.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Just say something real quick. So I just want to give you a plug. It's an amazing show. It's an amazing podcast. I want to encourage your listeners, like, if you love this, tell your friends, like, support Felicia. We got to support our own businesses. This is actually easy to support because it's free. You don't have to spend any money.
Yes.
But she's building an amazing podcast that's giving you guys great information. It's, I hope, entertaining conversations. And let's help her grow. She doesn't really need our help, to be honest with you, at this point. But, like, do your part. Support the show. Tell your friends about it. It's really important we do that in our community. And we're vocal about it. And we recycle the money and do all that. But this is an amazing, amazing show. I've listened to a couple of podcasts myself. A lot more. Others have been more entertaining than this one. So I apologize about that. But but support her. Tell your friends about it. Enjoy it. Download it, etc. And let's do our part to help build each other up and build our own companies. And, you know, in light of what happened with Nipsey Hussle, all the stuff he was trying to do, let's build up each other and invest and support each other. If we don't do it, no one else is going to do it for us.
Amen. And that is the truest word. So until next time, you guys, keep it true. The Trill MBA Show is a Fair World Corp LLC production, executive produced by Felicia and Rose Anuha. Music is Kick Push by Ryan Little. Keep it trill every day, y'all.